This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 27th. I'm John Gibson, and with me early on a Sunday morning is my buddy Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
Well, yeah, good. I mean, for considering it's an early Saturday morning, but yeah, I'm doing well. Yourself?
Oh, no, he doesn't even know what day it is. It's Sunday. I'm good.
Oh, it is Sunday, Saturday. Isn't it? Okay. Well,
now we know what your state of mind is.
Now you know that dates, times, and days were put on this earth to confound me.
Well, at least you remember my name or my face.
Okay, Jake. Let's rock and roll.
All right. Well, good to be with you this morning. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Tyler Austin of DNA. We go rocking with Roki and tossing with Togo. And we take a look at Laser Man, Chusei, Manami, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right, so I went out to Jingu Stadium on Wednesday and had the pleasure of talking to Tyler Austin, who is in his fifth season in Japan and still working hard to establish himself, as injuries have just slowed his progress at every turn. And in fact, yesterday he crashed into the dugout. I guess it was actually the camera well, after making a catch in the, I believe it was the sixth inning, two-out play. And so it ended the inning. All the Bay Stars kind of gathered around, circled him. They were just as concerned as everybody. And he got up and ran to the back, to the training room, I suppose, kind of holding his left wrist, arm area, forearm area against his body, not really putting his right hand on it. So that, I guess that was the good news. So we'll see how he is. I did read a report this morning that said they're just going to look at him and see how he is doing today and then make a decision. So that's good. I guess they didn't make a determination that there was any big injury at the moment, but a sprain is just as bad as anything, because that can take a long time to heal. But anyway, Tyler has played 107 games. This is most games played in Japan. And his season game totals are 65, 38, 22 in other seasons. So he was approaching, I guess he was around 20 games here, not quite at the 20-game mark here. He had a good game the day we spoke on Wednesday, then followed that up with a fantastic game and a hero interview on Thursday. And I talked to Bay Stars lover Michael Westbay, our own Michael Westbay, via messages on Thursday night, and said that a lot of players have done well after talking to me. And then he countered by saying the opposite has also been true. And I know that there was a narrative out there by some listeners saying, you know, you go on JBW and you start to go downhill. And I think that was more Jim's making a face here, but I think that was more just a couple of outliers. I don't think that's the case, but
It happens.
It's bound to
happen. It happens because we talk to players and players get hurt. Those two are not necessarily related.
I would say they're not related at all. Yeah, get hurt. Yeah, that's true. They get hurt, or their numbers go down somehow. Their performance drops. But anyway, it was good to talk to Tyler. He's a really good guy. I really enjoyed talking with him, even if we're not doing an interview, and that has only happened a couple times. He was in a sleeveless tank top that day that we talked, with body armor on. And I'm telling you, he's super built with muscles from you to me, Jim. I don't know how he ends up getting these injuries. It seems like if he crashed into the wall would have to go to the hospital. You know, it's confounding. The Bay Stars have also been hit with a rash of injuries, including Shugo Maki, who had a hamstring strain and he was deactivated on May 21st, and some other players who just kind of been inconsistent. And so It was a good time for Tyler to be there, to have a power supply or add some power to that lineup and be there and be a stable figure in that lineup. And I hope he gets back soon. But he had some really nice things to say on Wednesday, so let's take a listen. So I'm still here with Tyler Austin at Jingu Stadium. How you doing, man?
It's good to see you. Good to see you as well. Yeah, I'm doing all right. Just day by day, you know?
Hey, man, minute by minute. Wait till you get to that point.
I hear that.
All right, so this team has seen a lot of iterations during your tenure here. So what kind of team is this year's squad?
Man, I think one of the big things you're seeing is you're seeing a lot of the younger guys implemented into the everyday roles and bring in a new energy, if that makes sense, right? Like these guys are energetic and fun to be around and hungry to win baseball games. So it's a good atmosphere around here right now.
Good. And you got Tsutsugo, he rejoins the team. Yep. How does that dynamic work when a proven player comes back into the locker room?
Well, you bring a guy like him back in, you know, a guy that's been here, done it at an extremely high level, and you add that threat back to the lineup, it makes this team that much more dangerous. So, yeah, it's great to have him back.
Now, I know you lost Shota Imanaga, but you also lost Trevor Bauer and some other players, including your buddy Neftali Soto. So, how do you realign each year with all the new blood that comes in?
Well, I think that's just baseball, right? Like, it's a constant turnover. A lot of new faces here, and a lot of new faces go, or a lot of older faces go, I should say. And, you know, that's just the way the game works. You got to figure out a way to get the job done. And, you know, we'd obviously love to have those guys back. But, you know, we got what we got right now. And, you know, I'm happy with what our team looks like.
Sure. Now, Imanaga, how did you learn he was going to the States, and how did you think he would do?
You know, he's talked about it ever since I got here five seasons ago. So
really?
He's you know, been one of those guys always asking questions about what it's like. And, you know, I personally thought he would do well. I didn't think, to be honest with you, I didn't think he would do as well as he's doing. I mean, this clip he's on right now is absolutely insane, right? Like he's the top pitcher in baseball, and I couldn't be happier for him, man. He's really doing it.
Now, the Bay Stars that I know brought in a sports psychologist, I believe it is, and that's a progressive move for a Japanese baseball team. How has that been? Because I know he speaks English.
Yeah, I don't remember what. I think this is his first year. Last year he was here. I believe he was here the year before that as well. So he's been here a few years. You know, guys seem to, you know, I guess work well with him. I don't have much experience with him, to be honest with you. So, but guys seem to be responding well to it, and you know, that's all you can ask for.
How is that portion of the game? Because I always worry about the mental recovery too. There's physical recovery, but there's a lot of mental recovery.
That's been the most difficult thing for me the last couple of years, man. It's just been injury after injury, and you add the mental part of that, and for me, that's been the most difficult part of it. You know, I've struggled with that heavily the last few years, so I'm finally feeling like I'm starting to get back to myself, and that's all you can ask for, really. You know, I had the injury earlier this year, and that was kind of brought me back to that negative mental mindset that I had, and you know, being back and being around some of these guys has really helped me with that the last couple of days. So
good.
Hopefully getting back to what I'm normally.
Well, always smile when you're out there on the field.
You got that right.
You know that? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Now, how do you feel about interleague?
I'm excited for it. I enjoy it. I think it's a good test against all the teams to figure out where everybody's at, right? Like, you know, that some teams do certain things better than others, and, you know, you get to stack yourself up against that team and see where you stand. So I'm excited for it.
How much do you pour through all the, you know, possible matchups and iterations of what you're going to play against, you know, the other teams?
Not much, to be honest. For me, not much.
Get out of here, you helicopter. We're recording.
What are you doing? No, to be honest, I'm day to day. You know, whoever's pitching that day or you know, whoever we're playing that day, that's kind of who my mindset's on. And we'll look forward to whatever those teams when we get that point. So, yeah, that's kind of how I view it right now.
Your second series is against Nippon Hammond, and you're going to go up to that new stadium.
Yep.
What have you seen and heard about SK Field?
We went there. We went there earlier this spring, or late in spring, I should say. And that's a world-class ballpark right there. Have you been out there yet?
Not yet.
Man, it's a special place. It's a they did it right. They really did. They really did it right. Happy for those guys.
Okay. Last question.
Yep.
What is up with the rundown plays in NPB? I know you guys had a bad one last year when Trevor was on the mound, and it just seems to be a problem in Japan. What is going on?
Well, I haven't seen much of it. You know, I saw the play last year with Trevor. That was a weird play. You know, and in those with runners on base, some of those plays can get kind of funky, right? So, like, it's not a cut and dry, hey, throw it here, throw it there. That's just not the way those plays work. So sometimes they end up looking a little bit funky, and sometimes they ended up being perfect. But, you know, you add in the speed of a lot of these runners and, you know, how aggressive a lot of these guys are, you know, that it can turn routine rundown play into something that you've never seen before, right? And I think that's just really to break it down like that, you know, I think that's the big thing is how fast a lot of these guys are and how aggressive they are. So, but I don't think there's a problem with it. I think it's just these guys run the bases really well and are super fast and aggressive. I think that's just what it is.
All right, I'm going to try to change my attitude toward it, but I've seen too many over 25 years.
Yeah,
to say.
You've probably seen a lot more than me. But I think it, like I said, I think it's just one of those things where guys are super aggressive, really fast runners, and things get a little get away from you real quickly in those plays. So hopefully we don't run into any of those this year.
Hope so. All right, man. Thanks a lot. Stay healthy.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Good luck. All right.
See you soon, huh?
All right.
All right. So other than the chopper that flew close to the field during the interview and was very annoying, what impressed you about Tyler's chat?
Well, a lot. Yeah. I've a couple of things I want to mention. First of all, is the bit about the mental health, which is a great question because but the point is I just remember so many players. I remember particularly one pitcher telling me, you know, how was it coming back from your surgery? He said it was like throwing with somebody else's arm.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was somebody with the Cebu Lions about 10 years ago. So I don't remember who, but that's the whole point is that everything we do in our lives is interconnected, and confidence is a necessary element in order for us to get it, you know, to unlock the door and walk out into the world every day.
Right.
Let alone do it, you know, walk out the door and see that there's 12,000 people watching to see what you do.
And cameras everywhere to replay it if you goof up. Yes.
Yes, exactly. So that was really good. And the other one, of course, I had another conversation in the past year in which somebody talked about it was Alessandro Maestri talking about sports psychologists and how when he first saw a sports psychologist in the minor leagues in the States, all the players were going like, I'm not going to be the one talking to him.
Right.
You know, don't try to think I'm the one who needs the sports psychologist, because all these testosterone fueled young guys are all, yeah, not me, but that is life. And so I thought there was a little bit of that in time. I think he needs an alarm bell or something when he's coming close to a wall. but other than that, I'm not here to cast aspersions, but I thought that was quite interesting. And we'll get to another topic about that a little bit later, about confidence and how it can trigger performance. I mean, it's absolutely necessary for us to work in our, you know, to exist, mm-hmm. to move forward every day. And so that's a big thing, and how some of the outside influences can really mess that up. So the other thing which I really liked was you catching him off base on the rundowns.
Ah,
he did really well to scramble back before he got tagged out. Would have got him in a pickle there.
Good one.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I thought that was that. I think there isn't. I think there's what he said is there's definitely an element to it. There's, in retrospect, we can all slow things down. And as fans, of course, we're separated from the 12,000, you know, there's 12,000 people in the stadium on the other side of the TV.
Right. Yes.
And we're calm and cool and saying, you know, to the umpire, how'd you miss that call? You know, it's like, and then when I'm at work and somebody said, well, why'd you do that story? And I'm going, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, which so, I was getting a lot of that about the Alex Dickerson story. And he interviewed a ghost. We haven't seen the guy of the dragons. Yeah, yeah.
Indeed. Really? Wow. Yeah. Well, he was there. He had your back yesterday. Well. So the So I enjoyed that. And I just the whole interview kind of, I mean, I don't want to sound all Mari Kondo on us, but just filled me with joy. I thought, I just really perked me up.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm good. I was two things. I guess I was just impressed that he keeps up with the major leagues, because obviously he was on the team with Shota Imanaga, and I expected him to know a little bit, but the fact that he knew that much and he offered, because I've asked those questions in the past of the guys who come here, how much do you continue to follow the major leagues? And they're like, not that much, you know, the games are on early in the morning. And of course, if you're a baseball player, yeah, that's early in the morning for you. And a lot of the games are done by the time, or not done, but almost over by the time they're waking up, and they're not thinking, especially the guys with families, they're not thinking, let's turn the TV on and watch some major league baseball. They're thinking, I got a job to do and I've got to focus on what I need to do. Let's, you know, get ready to get to the ballpark. But
not unless their wife, since the WBC, their wife has been suddenly realized that baseball is something that goes on the TV. And if the TV's not on, what's wrong with you?
No comment.
Speaking for a friend.
Hashtag high heat.
That friend needs more coffee.
He does.
But yeah, I'm just assuming he is following Major League Baseball, not just Imanaga, because he said, yeah, he's the best pitcher in the major leagues at the moment and has the best numbers. And yeah, I didn't ask him if he watched MPB highlight shows or any of that, but it does seem like he's following Major League Baseball, if not only Imanaga. And then I know the mental aspect that Tyler's talking about in the struggle, because you have an injury, you come back, and you have this, there's a fear factor. If I do this, is it going to reoccur? Or if I do this action or this behavior, will I incur another injury? So that's what I'm experiencing right now, because, as you know, I have the bad hip here. And I want to run outdoors and I want to do the things. I see people running and I'm like, I can do that. I've been doing that for 20 plus years here. But it's a struggle to actually go out and try and do it. And if you have any pain, and there's mental anguish that comes with that, and then depression, you know, it really can affect you. And I have it on very good authority that in one season here, Tyler was playing after a concussion. He had a concussion and he was continuing to play.
Yeah. Koshien, I think he had a collision with Koshien.
I don't remember exactly where it happened. My thought was it was at Yokohama Stadium, but okay. Again, maybe that was a different play.
I think it was two. I think he did. It's like Koshien's a precursor for concussions. It happened to a Swallows outfielder. He had his first liaison with an outfield wall at Koshien last weekend, and then he got one at the beginning of this past week. I think with Tyler it was the same. I think he got at Koshien first, and then Yokohama delivered the knockout blow,
yeah, so to speak. So yeah, and so you think about that struggle, and then the competitive aspect, and you're struggling with that, and that's why I asked the question about the mental recovery, because it's so important. And, you know, I thought it was last year. Last year was the first year that I had seen this sports psychologist on the bench. And while the sports psychologist speaks English, because he and Tyler were speaking that day. But, you know, Tyler said he hasn't really talked to him that much. But there's always stigma attached to these things. And we just have to get rid of that, because you have a support system around you with teammates and coaches and team officials, and they should all be trying to help and all push in the same direction. And, you know, everyone says whatever it takes, and they're talking about on the field. And of course with preparation, but that's part of it. And I'm hoping, you know, like I said, I thought it was a real progressive move by the Bay Stars. And I just hope that we see that more prevalent on other teams, and that,
especially with the foreign guys, because it's so challenging here anyway, with the difference in everything, including the baseball culture, that it just needs to be something that I would say more prevalent and something that we can hopefully take the stigma away from and push guys in that direction. Just have chats with people who help them and deal with the changes and the mental challenges in the game.
Yeah, I think well said.
All right, so let's make a four-seam transition now, and let's go rocking with Roki right away, because we've got a no-hitter to talk about as well. I don't know how much you got to see of Sasaki. I was actually trying to watch that game, but then I kept noticing that there was a no-hitter going in Koshi, and so my eyes basically, I think, was about the fifth inning that they switched over to Hanshin and Yomiuri. But here's the problem with that. I was doing a desk shift on Friday, and I got to my station and the train on the Seibu line had stopped. We had a jumper, so I was trapped. I wasn't able to get home and put all the TVs on like I usually do. So I was at a restaurant. I went to have dinner since I couldn't get home, and I had my phone, and the Dragons game was at the restaurant. And
oh, lucky you.
And I had my phone entertain me to watch Togo finish off his no-hitter. So let's talk about rocking with Roki first, though. On Friday in Chiba against the hottest team in NPB, and he didn't stop them cold, but he stopped them for sure. And Saki went seven innings. He allowed five hits, an earned run, two walks. He hit a batter, struck out eight, and threw 119 pitches again. Hit 162 on the gun to tie his fastest pitch. But I have to be honest, I didn't see much, like I said, after the fifth inning. And the Dragons were really not entertaining. The Lotte Marines beat the SoftBank Hawks 3-1. And so Sasaki got the win. And like I said, he did slow down the Hawks pretty good. And he looks okay. How much did you see? And what were you
I saw impression? The first inning. And I thought, wow, he's really, he ain't going to make it today. When I saw the Marines came back with two runs in the second, like he gave up a run in the first inning. And it was a, let's be precise here, a 35-pitch first inning.
Mm-hmm.
And all the damage, I think there was a good defensive play behind him that helped. He left the bases loaded, and all the damage came on a Kensuke Kondo double, which was on this huge, fat, hit-me-to-Mars splitter. And Kondo did his best and only got to the track, I think. But that it also only drove in a run because the runner on first base was Hotaka Yamakawa.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one out, I think. So he ended up with the bases loaded, and I'm going, okay, this is not a good game. His location was terrible. He didn't look very comfortable, but he ended the inning. And this is something I was looking for. Was because last week, if you recall, I think he struck out seven guys on three pitches each. Mm-hmm. And he struck out 12, but seven of them were on three pitch punch outs. And he was throwing 8, 9, 10 pitches in some of these at bats. And then he finished against Richard Sinagawa on a three pitch punch out. And I'm thinking, well, that's interesting. Okay, he's only losing 1-0, but he's thrown 35 pitches, so let's see what happens. And then he got a two-run, then he retired the next eight batters. Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me, he did not. He retired eight of the next nine batters. There was an error. There was a dropped ball in the outfield. But he basically cruised after that, so it was quite interesting. I've seen this a couple of times in his games this year where something wasn't quite right in the first inning.
Uh-huh.
And when it looked like nothing was going to work, well, in fact, one game when he did quite well, it was like that for three innings. And then all of a sudden, he's Roki Sasaki again. So I really like this.
Yeah, well,
as a sort of a little marker of his maturity and his experience, that he can reach into that tool bag a little bit when you know, when this problem pops up, he's got an answer, because we saw even in 2022 when he was bordering on miraculous, he'd go to a stadium where the umpire gave him some side eye and his game would go, his game would go sideways. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, I did notice that I saw more sliders or more off speed pitches, and sometimes he was throwing that splitter at a different speed and it was dancing a little bit more. It was breaking down downward a little bit more. But yeah, I just thought he was pitching, not throwing out there on Friday. And that's what got him through. Yeah, that seems to be what we're seeing more of his development this year, is that instead of just trying to spot a fastball or throwing fork, he's mixing in those other pitches, the curve and the slider on occasion.
Well, that's all right, because like I said, the April Sasaki was a little different from the May Sasaki. The April Sasaki was, this is going to be my new look. And then, that didn't work. You know, let's bring back the curveball. And he's throwing the sweeper less and he's throwing more, you know, just he's gone back to his old slider.
Yeah. There's one thing, though, I wouldn't say it's alarming, but his career high in hit batters, because, you know, I keep my Roki Sasaki line on here and I make new notes every week, and I just keep his line and I cut and paste it. And
I say
every week I'm thinking, there's another hit batter. And he has a career high of 7 hit batters, and he hit a guy for the 4th time this season. Now, I just want to keep an eye on it. Because we're only in May, but I don't know if he's not pinpointing with the control or hitters are crowding the plate. So I'm going to start to watch out for that to see how the guys are getting hit, because it's starting to bother me that I'm going through this line. I'm about to erase the hit batter. And I'm like, no, there's one this week too. And so, like I said, the 4th time I've seen this come up, or I looked at his numbers for the season and he's got 4 hit batters. So I'm kind of concerned. So I'm going to start to look and see what's going on, how they're being hit, instead of just the fact that it is a hit batter. But yeah, nothing else. He was pretty good. And that was the hottest team in Japan. I don't think 8 in a row or 7 in a row they had won. The Hawks coming in.
I'm not going to venture.
Somewhere around there. But they were
somewhere around there, 7 maybe.
And he pretty much shut him down after that point. And the bullpen held on to the lead.
Yeah, so that miraculous.
It's important, too, for him to come away with the victory, which is what we're all fishing for, right? Victory number 4 for him. So good. And then we also had Shohei Togo of the Giants, as I said, throwing a no-hitter. And, I kind of watched him, too. And it just seemed like he didn't dominate. This was not this great dominating performance by a pitcher who just kind of shut down the opposing team so much as he just made good pitches and got the job done. He became the 89th pitcher to hurl a no-hitter. He wins it 1-0. It's the 101st NPB no-hitter, the first Giants pitcher to do it at Koshien Stadium since 1936, and that was Eiji Sawamura who did that.
So, and, you know, surprisingly, there have been, I mean, the Giants have a lot of no-hitters. And of course, in Japan, we actually don't know how many no-hitters have been thrown, because they don't count them all.
Yes.
They don't count no-hitters that aren't shutouts. And I know of at least 2, which would be no-hitters in MLB but aren't in Japan and don't exist in the records unless you look for them.
Right.
But anyway,
Japan, it's no-hit, no-run.
Yeah, exactly. It's a no-hit shutout. Anyway, so getting back to the point is, of all the no-hitters the Giants have thrown, and they've been playing against the Hanshin Tigers since 1936, that was only the 5th no-hitter between those 2 teams.
Wow.
They were tied at 2 apiece. The 2 Giants no-hitters, previous Giants no-hitters, as we mentioned, were in 1936 and 1937. And those were the first 2 no-hitters in Japanese pro baseball history by Eiji Sawamura.
Both by Sawamura, yes.
Yeah, and then the Giants didn't get another one for, you know, 87 years.
But who's counting?
Well, that's my job, so yeah, I am. But my take on the no-hitter, and unfortunately, I was unable to watch the baseball. I watched the beginning of Sasaki's game and then was doing other stories And then when Togo, after the sixth inning, I started watching Togo. And what I saw was, by that time, you're kind of like the batters. You're going, help me. Somebody help me. Because he had basically three pitches that were, he was locked in. And then he was throwing this slider on the outside corner to lefties for a strike. Just like perfectly on the black, and they're going, don't do that.
What am I supposed to do with that? Yeah.
I know. You know, it's either called strike three or it's a called strike one. And then he'd throw the splitter, of course. He didn't throw it a lot, but he was absolutely pinpointing his fastball, and it had really good hop on it, which is not his normal routine. And people were really struggling. You know, they were thinking, I have no idea what's coming. Just please make contact, kind of thing.
Right.
And they did. And he missed in the ninth inning. He was very lucky to escape with that no run game, because he walked a batter. He said he was pressing a little bit in the ninth inning. And then Koji Chikamoto hit a bullet.
Yep.
That, you know, if it's 2 feet to either way, it's an RBI single instead of a line out.
Mm-hmm.
So, because the runner's on first, that thing's going to go down the line, RBI double probably. So that's how close it was. And then he got to Takumi Nakano to end the game on a pitch. You know, that was one of the chase ones. He's going like, I'm ahead in the count. There's no way I'm throwing it in the zone.
Yeah. Go fish.
Yeah. Right after he took a fastball, he took a fastball right down the middle.
Yeah. So he didn't have a big walk-off style celebration afterward. I think the guys on the field weren't really believing what they had just seen or something. It was very Giants, like very sanitized, you know.
It wasn't hold on a second before we celebrate. Here are your clip-on neckties.
Hashtag high heat.
We do these things the Giants way.
Yeah, wipe as much dirt off your uniforms as you can and tuck those shirts
in. That was a Scott Matheson sort of complaint about the Giants. I know he works for them now, but he said they wanted to control everything to make it look, as you said, sanitized.
Yes. Yeah. And so, again, a really good performance. The guys on the field were part of the spaghetti kind of brigade I spoke of during the Central League prediction show. I mean, we saw guys like Yuta Izuguchi and Yukinori Kishida was out there, and Soichiro Tateoka, they revived him. Now he's a veteran. He was out there on the field. So they're throwing anything out there to try to get games on a particular day, or cover for injuries or find matchups or whatever. But yeah, I really think Togo could have had a perfecto going into the ninth inning. Now he walked a batter in the ninth, and one of the reasons he didn't have a perfect game going into the ninth was because it was his own error.
Sure. But
there was also another error, and so he had the walk. But I think, like I said, it wasn't this spectacular dominant performance. Went through the outs. He had 8 outfield flyouts, 5 strikeouts, and a walk. Everything else was either a pop-up or a ground out, and not overpowering. But I think, you know, here's a sixth round pick in 2018. And remember, we saw him in the playoffs in 2019. They threw him out there early on as a butt rookie, I like to call him. No kind of experience. I think he pitched 2 regular season games that year, had started one of them. And here he is in the playoffs, and they threw him out in a really important game. And, you know, he didn't really flinch. I don't think he won the game, but because I can't remember, and I didn't have time to look it up, but I know he didn't flinch. And I thought, well, that bodes well for a guy who probably is going to make the rotation next year. And really, he has been in the rotation ever since then. And he is pitching well. This I don't know that people saw this coming, this kind of performance, but I think the Giants have had belief in him for a while, and they said he's a, you know, they called him the ace, and
he's definitely is like now.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, of course, 2022, he led the Central League in strikeouts, and he's had that. So I don't know if I wouldn't say nobody saw this coming, because he was certainly in that class of pitcher. You know, he's thrown, you know, a couple of games where might have given up a hit early, and at the end of the game, you're going, geez, you know, if it hadn't been for that first, that little, you know, that little first inning hit, this would be a no hitter kind of thing.
Well, what I meant by that comment being a sixth pick of
Okay.
And the hopes for that person becoming an ace, not necessarily throwing a no-no or anything,
but true.
That guy being at the front of your rotation. I don't think that was what people saw.
They like people, you know, baseball people like things that are well defined.
Mm-hmm.
They like
quantification.
Mm-hmm. Well, not quantification, but they like pigeonholes.
Mm-hmm.
He's this kind of player, or he's that kind of player, and well, this is a human nature. Life's complicated, and we try to simplify things. And here's a pitcher whose I guess his stock in trade was for a while, he calls it a nanjakore slider, which is some kind of breaking pitch that you can't really define.
Okay.
And it's named after a sweet in Miyazaki, a Japanese sweet, which is essentially translated as what the heck is this? And
what's going on? Yeah, all right.
And so, you know, when you see that, when a guy throws a ball that's sort of got, you know, his stock in trade is a ball that's undefinable, people go like, yeah, it's a gimmick. It's always that thing. So yeah, I see what you're saying, but when I think, you know, nobody saw this coming, the pitcher I see nobody seeing this coming is Yasuhiro Ogawa, who was the first pitcher who ever threw a no-hitter, who had never struck out 10 batters in a game prior to that.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's the kind of guy I see when I think of. So I'm going, no, these two things, which of these things is not alike?
Well, so yeah, it was a really fun night, a nice wave. I was happy for Giants fans and for the Giants to get that kind of performance, and Togo's a likable guy.
Sure.
And it was nice for him. It's a really nice moment.
Oh, I was going to say, and for the second week in a row, it made me feel like I was 2 years younger.
That again, are we?
Yeah, we are there again. Yeah. Except I don't remember 2 years ago, Raydel Martinez having an inning like that.
Yeah,
it was a weird weekend. I mean, as little as I saw over the week, it was a weird weekend, especially Friday night. It was like the extra innings from hell games for a couple of teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Except for the tempered celebration at the end with the Giants, it was a really fun night. All right. Let's make a two seam transition and talk about Laser Man. Chusei Manami of the Fighters got me going. I'm sending Jim messages. Jim, what's this and what's that and how many outfield assists and what's the record for outfield assists in a single season? I can't even believe how many Manami is piling up here early in the season. But he had a couple of laser beam throws early this past week, and one on Tuesday, one on Wednesday. So take it away with the records and the his numbers and the pace that he's on and all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So well, anyway, so John asked what was the record, and he says what, like, I remember 15 one year by,
Jun Hirose,
right. This guy had a rifle.
Yeah.
I remember him. In fact, there's a reason why I remember it, but I won't go into it.
He played for the Carp, and that's all I remember.
He played for the Carp, and I saw a study that year somebody published a study about how many runs, because the reason I'll get into this is because it's not like I downplayed outfield arms, but it's really hard to quantify the impact that an outfield arm has, because all you see are the outs.
Mm-hmm.
And what you need to know is how often how often players advance on bases.
Or how often they stop in their tracks because
the corollary to that. If they're not advancing, they're stopping or they're being thrown out. So you've got to know those three things. And we very rarely do. But I saw a study about 2016, 15 maybe, and about that. And I noticed that Jun Hirose was saving a huge amount of runs with his arm by getting outs and by keeping runners from advancing. Mm-hmm. That it really perked up my interest in the subject. So, and I think it ended up getting me somebody gave me a bat because of that, the research I did in that, because I wrote about him and I said, you know, I wrote about it one day and I think Claudio Rodriguez mentioned it. And then when I finally had a chance to talk to this guy, he said, wait a minute, here, have this. That was the Cuban outfielder, played for the Dragons and Giants. I can't even remember his name now, but he had a really good release, and he wasn't particularly fast, but when he got the ball, nobody moved. He played one season with the Giants. He played, I think, two with the Dragons. So anyway, long story short, I looked into that because of the season, the research that was being done, and Jun Hirose and John popped the question about what was the record. Was it 15? And I said no. And, you know, I looked back and the record was 24 outfield assists by the Taiyo Whales, Kikuji, the immortal Kikuji Hirayama. That sounds awful. I don't really know anything about Mr. Hirayama, but he recorded 24 outfield assists. And the most recent big number of assists.
And everyone sit down. Sit down, find a seat before you fall over when you hear this.
No, but if you remember this, I mean, but if you really remember, when Sho Nakata turned pro, he was a big two-way player in high school, pitcher and hitter. And then, although they didn't really do much of that, he did very little bullpen work as a rookie for the Fighters, because my buddy Masataka Nishida was determined to see if he couldn't make him fail as a third baseman. Okay, I love you, man, but that was weird. Okay.
Oh, gosh.
So anyway, they didn't really have a place for him except in left field, where he showed that he could throw strikes. We've seen him play. He's one of these guys who has really he's very athletic for a chunky, you know, he's very powerful with good reflexes and good balance. So mm-hmm. he's really good at making throws. You see that at first base now. Again, my issue is that it's whether he's motivated or not, you know. Yes. Whether he's one of those guys where if he's not motivated, he looks like the worst player in the world. And then day when he's got a reason to play, he looks like an all-star.
Well, and we need you to focus here and give us the numbers, okay. Which you haven't done yet.
need me to pay attention. Okay, I hear you. Okay, I get the illusion. Okay, so anyway, yeah, Sho Nakata had 19 in 2012, so that was the year before he became the second most famous player on the Fighters.
Yeah, right, before Darvish came around, right? Shohei Ohtani came around, yes.
Yeah, that was the one year he was the king of the hill after Darvish left and before Ohtani showed up.
Yes. So that might have been the last time, because I actually kind of recall talking about Sho Nakata and how many runners he was throwing out back then. So that might have been the last time we talked about the record. But we have 6 months of baseball. To get 24, I guess you have to throw out a lot of guys each month. But Manami seems to be doing that. He had another assist yesterday. That one was not one of these laser beam throws. It was kind of the runner was in motion, and he just flipped the ball to first base after making a catch because the runner couldn't get back. But it still counts as an outfield assist.
It does.
And what's his total now? And
seven.
And he's got seven? Only seven?
Yep.
No! I saw six in the first two, 3 weeks.
Somebody did not have six in the first three weeks.
Somebody's doing a bad count.
He made some awfully good throws that were just sort of like the runner going, geez, I'm glad I didn't go.
Seven, including yesterday's?
Yes.
That's crazy.
True. I apologize for the truth.
Yeah, somebody, I apologize for the truth. Go back and get the right number and then make that the truth. Go
yeah, back. Make it. Let's get all MAGA on here and let's get we don't an alternative reality.
Well, I know there's at least two that he missed. One was a throw he would have had the runner out, but he threw it over the catcher's head and just threw it too high. So he airmailed one that he could have had. So maybe I'm counting that one. And there was another one where I think there was a replay and they took it away from him. But yeah, seven, that just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, so, through the NPB website through May 25th has him leading NPB with seven, and three people have four.
Yeah, well, he had a couple of the most amazing throws I've seen in a while. One was he threw out a runner with two outs on a single to right field, and the runner was Masahiro Nishino of Oryx. And I haven't seen enough of Nishino to know that he's a fast runner or a slow runner, so I'm going to say he's probably an average runner.
He's an average runner. He's the typical Oryx player from 10 years ago with kind of short legs. And
yeah. Well, when I mean, with two outs and a single to right, and I think it even went off the first baseman's glove. I think it got slowed down a little bit. Maybe it ticked off the first baseman's glove. So, I mean, he had all the ability to get home. You're gonna run 100% of the time, so there's no question.
Sure.
You're always going to go. And Manami threw him out there. And then his other throw just looked like, you know, he threw a runner out at third. It just looked like the ball was shot out of a cannon. And it was an incredible throw. So back-to-back nights he had assists. And then
yeah, he's pretty
and
electric.
Then one yesterday. So that's three. Yeah. And I know he's had more. Seven, I don't know
apologize.
If he is watching the right. Yeah, they're not watching the same games as I am. But
yeah, I hate it when that happens.
But I just love this kid's athleticism and talent. I've talked about that, drooled over it. I just hope the bat comes along as impressively as the arm and the other skills. Right so far, it just hasn't. But again, he was a fourth pick of the Fighters in 2018. He's 24, so we should see a little bit more with the bat if we're thinking that he's going to progress in that fashion, and he really hasn't. And you know, 265.
Well, he hasn't taken a step forward from last year yet.
Yeah,
but this is a weird year.
Yeah, the 25 home runs. I'm admitting that there's something going on with some of the balls, but again, sometimes you get one of those bad balls in the batch and people are whacking those and they're flying normally, but he had 25 home runs last year. He only has five so far this year. And he's not hitting 250, but he's a career 237 hitter. Would like to see that climb up a little bit more too, but the other parts of the package are just outstanding. Really love his defensive, his throwing skill. That arm is just, again, like you say, it's not just, we can't measure everything. And we don't know how many guys have stopped because they're like, oh, that's Manami out there. I'm not going anywhere. Nail me to this base and get me some handcuffs or something so I can't even wander off too far in case the ball gets past the first baseman and I want to think about running to second base. On a pickoff play. So anyway, he's making TikTok and YouTube. You know, if you just do a search for his throws over the years, you get so many plays. All right, so we got two notes this week, and we're going to start with one from Jim.
As long as we're talking about the ball, and you know, and or at least I was talking about the ball, which is what I do. I do want to point out that I had a chat yesterday with Tomoya Mori, the former Pacific League MVP with the Lions and now plays with Oryx. And I asked him, do you look at your TrackMan data on your balls? Because, you know, there have been lots of excuses about the ball lots of excuses why there are no home runs. And we remember in 2013, when the ball became so lively, manager Koji Akiyama, the Hawks, said, oh, all the hitters are making good adjustments this year. And I remember Matt Merton going, right. But when you see everybody in the league doing it, you know it ain't everybody in the league doing it.
Yep.
You know, they're not all coming up with, you know, the light bulbs aren't going on across the league at the same time. There's a contextual issue. So I asked a question I've actually wanted to pose to the analytics guys, if they will, you know, I'm thinking of a way to phrase this so it sounds like I'm not being, you know, I'm not telling them to give me the company secrets, is, do you have the TrackMan data of balls that were hit into the seats last year, launch angle, direction, and velocity,
mm-hmm.
and compare that to this year?
Okay.
And my guess is if they get those three things, and I know that's not 100% because the other factor is the atmosphere.
Right.
You know, the temperature in the ballparks, but it's not like it's been cold this year. So I don't really think that's a big issue. It hasn't been pretty cold and wet more than any normal year. Last year was not so wild. But yeah, if you have those, and I haven't asked the analytics guys, like I said, because I'm so shy and thinking about a way to say it. I did ask Tomi Omori. I said, is it, by chance, have you looked at your TrackMan data? He says, well, as a matter of fact, I have.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, he didn't put it quite that way, but he said, yes, I have. And I've noticed that the balls that I hit as well as I did last year, he said, first of all, I've got zero home runs this year. And I've watched and checked the data, and the balls that I've hit hard or harder than I hit last year have died on the warning track.
Mm. So
anyway, and so to circle back to the Tyler Austin bit, he said, yeah, I have noticed that. But my first thought was something's wrong with me.
Mm. Yep.
And I think one of the things we're seeing a little bit in the results is a contextual shift. And as I said, all the balls, they make all the balls more or less the same, but all the balls don't come out the same.
Sure.
They're more regular than they are in MLB, but they will still vary. You will still get a ball that is livelier than, you know, you'll have two balls produced at the same factory at the same week, and one will be fairly lively and one will be fairly dead. It's just the way things happen.
Hmm.
So as John said, some balls fly easily, but you know, it's not like every baseball is under a death sentence. You know, dead ball walking here, but by and large, yeah, the balls are definitely the issue this year. So anyway, I brought that up and I just wanted to mention those two things, that there is, you know, people are looking, people are paying attention. And I do intend to ask every power hitter now that all 12 teams, thank you, Hiroshima, for finally allowing TrackMan into your stadium.
Woo-hoo.
I know. Amazing. Amazing.
Welcome to the 21st
century.
So now
we've got 12 teams to players to ask about their data. Because I'll bet the home run hitters are looking.
I bet they are.
Even if the teams aren't, then the teams don't want to talk about it for sure. So, okay.
And one more note, like I talked to Tyler and said that the Interleague is starting this week. And
all right.
And only in 2009 and 2022 were the years that the Central League has finished with more wins head to head against the Pacific League. So we kind of know what to sort of expect, and hoping that the Central League can hang in there. But because of the Lions and the bad way they were in for a while, finally snapping a long skid yesterday, perhaps we will get a good idea of what these teams look like. What's the bottom? What's the floor and what's the ceiling? But I think the Central League, it's hard to gauge that league right now because the teams are so close together. Whereas in the Pacific League, you've got obvious talent with the Hawks and obvious struggle going on in Tokorozawa with the Lions. So, the Fighters really have surprised me this year, and I'm expecting that team to do well in the interleague as well. So we'll see. It should be really fun.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is going to be, you know, as I said, until 2019, the huge gap in interleague play. I mean, it was just it was so obvious to everybody who looked, but nobody wanted to talk about it. You just couldn't get a story. You never saw a story. I mean, John and I were talking about it, and I was writing about it all the time, but it really, until the Giants ended up in the Japan series in 2020 against the second place Hawks and were swept in four games.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2021, they were swept in four games. And the Giants said, it's not fair. And I think that was the wake-up call. And Tatsunori Hara saying, the Central League has to get a designated hitter because it's not fair that they have it and we don't. We get into the Japan series and we're at a disadvantage, which I think has always been true. But it was like, until he said it, nobody wanted to hear it. Everybody had the blinders on.
Yep, that's how it goes.
And since then, the Central League shifted and gotten better. And so I think there's only one season in this will be the 20th year of Interleague. And there's only one season in which the Central League scored more runs than they allowed. So
take that. All right.
Take that.
Well, yep. It'll be fun. I'll be watching. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to fielding questions. So this question came a few weeks back, I would say, mm-hmm. and it's from Rock Dan, and he clarified on Twitter how to pronounce that, so thank you very much. And he says, any updates on the future of the Meiji Jingu situation? Any chance it can still be saved? No rush. It's just been a while since it was discussed on the show, and I'm curious if I missed any news on it. Jim.
Dan, thanks for the, we saw that he sent a tweet and said, my name is Dan. So Dan, I'll skip the Rock, but you can be Rock or Dan or both. Anyway, but Jingu is now in the courts. Tokyo has begun demolishing areas around Jingu Stadium where they intend to put the new, I don't know what, where they intend to replace the historic rugby stadium with a ice skating rink,
mm-hmm.
essentially.
Okay.
And all around there, they have images. They have the new images of the pristine sports hub, high-tech glass and steel green space sports hub that has been sterilized of all the people who actually now play sports there and replaced with tennis courts for the wealthy. I mean, it's remarkable. So that's what they're aiming for. So if anybody who isn't a blog reader will know that my nickname for Jingu Stadium is Tokyo's sacrifice to corporate greed and government malfeasance stadium.
Hashtag high heat.
Well, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I've been silent on this subject, and it's because I don't think I'm in the popular party on this topic. The stadium itself, I'm for, you know, it's old, it's crusty, it needs to be rebuilt. So on that part, I'm firmly in favor of the rebuild. And
I'm in favor of a remodeling, you know, do what they did to Fenway and Koshien and Wrigley.
Not me. The field is sagging in some areas. Quite frankly, it's amazing these high-priced athletes are asked to go out and play at this venue. I mean, not to mention the media members, and I don't, that's really not important for the stadium, but the media members have to suffer through games being, some of them can sit in the area behind the plate and actually see the field. Others have to sit in the back and watch a monitor. So what's the point of being there in that respect? But look, I don't agree with D
degrading all the greenery and the leafy areas of Tokyo. I don't like that portion of it. But as for the stadium itself, I can't wait for it to be rebuilt. And I'd be happier with a plan that preserves some of the natural environment. But I can tell you this, as for fighting City Hall and for fighting these plans, when I was in Nagoya, we had two major stories that we followed in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. And one was, both of them were citizens fighting City Hall. And City Hall had a plan to take some of the wetland area and put in a waste facility in which they would reclaim the land with waste. And the other one was homeless people living in a park jungle apparatus that they repurposed and used as their living quarters. So the city won on the homeless point and lost against the fans, or I'm sorry, against the public on the wetlands reclamation project. So suffice to say, it's really hard. The other one,
it is hard.
The other one was the Expo 2005, and that never had a chance of being nixed. So that was just kind of fruitless. But you say you can't fight City Hall, but you can get City
Hall.
You can get them to redo their plans. And so that's what I'm hoping for. Maybe restructure the plans or something like that, so that it preserves. But the stadium is going to get rebuilt.
That's really not in the cards, because it's all about
malfeasance.
It's all about, I think, and this is just my opinion, but it's about construction companies paying off creditors and pumping money into their coffers so that they can pay off loans. Now, they, as far as fighting City Hall, they did a really good job of preventing this from becoming news. When when I talked to Tokyo about the plan, they said it's all on the website, and it showed this whole list of public discussions with the community, except those public discussions with the community were with people they invited to private discussions because nobody in the community, the only people who heard about it were people who were going to benefit from it.
Yeah. And, you know, when you've got that much money involved, what do you think is going to happen?
I mean, well, Robert Whiting, when he's been involved in this, and when he and I spoke about it 2 years ago, he mentioned what happened with Tokyo Station. Now, if you go to Tokyo Station on the east side, on the, the Yaesu side, it's all new and looks fantastic and beautiful and modern. And then on the west side, the Marunouchi side, facing the Imperial Palace, they've rebuilt. See, when I arrived in Tokyo in 1984, in Japan in 1984, the station looked more or less the same, but much of the station building was a facade left over from the World War II bombing. They had just sort of patched up and made it look like a model of Tokyo Station, with essentially a hollow shell for much of it. And they were going to destroy that whole structure to build more glass and steel. So Bob said that a bunch of artists, basically, once they learned of the plan, they sat outside Tokyo Station painting it and drawing it in public and drawing attention to it. So eventually the city had to say, okay, we public opinion is against us, we're not going to go through it. So that's why the Tokyo learned from that, and they kept the whole Jingu plan a top secret as long as they could, and basically until it was already decided, and then said, here's the plan Tokyo wants. So now it's in the courts, and the courts could stop it, but the work has already started.
A lot of money.
It's all about money and not about, I think this is all about money and not what people really need or want.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much, Rock Dan, for the question. Yes. And thank you for waiting and your patience. And
thanks for the kind words.
And the kind words and the pronunciation of your Twitter handle.
Yep.
Anyone else that has a question, hit us up at JBW Podcast on Twitter.com with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions by email, including MP3s or voice messages, to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. Hit us up on the Facebook page.
leave us a comment, criticism, anything you want, and look for us on iTunes. And until the message I got was through June, we're on Google Podcasts as well. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag HighHeat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.